In 1996, while I was serving as a police officer with the Metropolitan Police Department in Washington, D.C., I experienced a very unique incident. And unique is putting it mildly. We were working on rotating shifts at the time, and on this day, my schedule had me on the midnight shift from 11:30 p.m. until 7:30 a.m. Monday morning. The district I patrolled was often in turmoil, which often meant a hectic workload. I was assigned to patrol a particular sector, which meant that I was responsible for all service calls unless a unit closer could respond faster, or if the situation called for backup. Around 4:30 a.m., dispatch informed me of a report from two separate individuals claiming they had been out for early morning jogs before work and had been chased by some sort of wild man in Rock Creek Park, which is located in Northwest Washington, D.C. They described the man as very strong, effortlessly keeping pace with them, but moving through dense foliage, all the while growling when he neared them. They remarked that the man appeared excessively hairy, even on his face. However, what seemed most strange to dispatch were two details. First, both witnesses insisted the man was clothed in what looked like fur. And second, they did not mention seeing him wearing shoes, despite the rough terrain. Both individuals had called from separate locations within minutes of each other, providing near identical descriptions. This prompted me to request any additional information from dispatch, but none was forthcoming. While officers sometimes encounter prank calls, particularly at such late hours, the consistency of these reports merited attention. After notifying dispatch of my plans, I proceeded on foot into Rock Creek Park, soon joined by another officer named Larry, who also had details from dispatch about earlier calls concerning a wild man in the park. Despite our initial skepticism, the parallels in the witness accounts warranted a cautious investigation. Rock Creek Park is expansive, with dense woodlands and streams making any search challenging, especially at night. To avoid unnecessary disturbance, we approach without headlights, using spotlights judiciously. Officer Larry began searching from the south toward the last known location of the suspicious person. About 30 minutes in, we heard movement in the woods in advance with spotlights under the near full moon. Initially, the figure resembled a large animal on all fours. However, as we drew closer, it became evident that this was not an animal at all. The figure had a human head and upper body, with features similar to those described by the witnesses, and seemed unclothed. At this point, one might wonder why we hadn't drawn our firearms. There are several reasons for this restraint: avoiding escalations, preventing unnecessary use of force, and the likelihood of exacerbating a potentially dangerous situation. As we approached the individual, who was agitated and growling, we tried to communicate. Officer Larry, a military veteran, recognized signs of instability. The suspect was unresponsive to our attempts at verbal engagement. Although it was a tense situation, backup arrived within 10 minutes. Now, with a total of 6 officers on the scene, we established a perimeter and engage the individual. So there we were, the 6 of us encircling this hulking figure that just didn't fit any normal description. It wasn't until Officer Martinez, who had a knack for tracking and wildlife, whispered to the rest of us, "Guys, I don't think we're dealing with a person here." We all paused, the absurdity of the situation hanging thick in the air. Martinez approached slowly, hands raised in a calming gesture, speaking gently. The creature's eyes tracked him with a mix of curiosity and caution. As the dawn began to break, the light revealed more than our flashlights could. The creature before us was massive, easily over 7 feet tall. Its fur, a deep brown that seemed to blend with the forest, covered it completely. The face, though partially human-like in structure, had features that were off, too broad, a nose too flat, and eyes that held an intelligence we couldn't quite grasp. The realization hit us all at once. We weren't dealing with a deranged individual or a wild man. We were standing meters away from what could only be a Sasquatch. It was as if all the legends and stories had come to life in front of us. The standoff lasted only a few more minutes before the creature turned and disappeared into the underbrush, moving fast enough to shock us with its speed. and also with an unnerving silence. We were left there, stunned, none of us daring to chase after it. The radio crackled to life. Dispatch was asking for an update, but what could we say? We hadn't apprehended a suspect. We had encountered a myth. Officer Larry finally spoke up. "Dispatch, this is Unit 22. The individual is no longer a concern. Appears to have left the park." There was a collective, unspoken agreement to leave out the unbelievable truth. As we left the park, the sun fully rising, we carried with us a story that we knew no one would accept at face value, a story that would stick with us for the rest of our lives. I've been listening to your reports and am particularly interested in those on winged creatures. Hearing them has taken me back to an experience from my childhood in Oklahoma. The story might seem outlandish, but perhaps you could shed some light on what I encountered. Growing up, camping was a staple activity for my family. One hot summer, we set up camp at Keystone Lake near Sand Springs, Oklahoma. To escape the sweltering heat, we'd either swim in the lake or relax under the shade of trees. One afternoon, my sister emerged from the lake, panicked, claiming something had grabbed her ankle while she was swimming. She later described it as feeling like hands. My mother settled her down and brushed off her tears, telling her it was probably just a fish or aquatic plants. It took her a while, but she finally settled down. That evening, after we had eaten, my parents chatted with another couple from the adjacent campsite, while my sister and I played frisbee on a grassy area. As darkness fell around 9 p.m., we started back toward our tent, positioned near a dense stretch of woods by the lake shore. Approaching our campsite, we detected a strange, sweet, fruit punch-like odor. I remember it vividly because I loved fruit punch at that age. Fireflies flickered just above the ground, mingling with tiny bugs in the air. We tried to catch a few as we walked. Passing a large oak on our way to the tent, an eerie silence enveloped us. The usual sound of the summer cricket ceased. We stopped and peered into the woods before a peculiar swooshing noise grabbed our attention from behind. It resembled the sound of several bedsheets flapping together rapidly, accompanied by a muffled popping. Then we heard a thud against a nearby tree trunk and heavy breathing from above. My sister was the first to look up. Her scream of, "Oh God," sent a chill down my spine. I hesitantly raised my eyes and saw a dark humanoid figure with large bat-like wings enfolded around its body, hanging from a tree limb right above us. We stood there totally in shock, and time seemed to stand still until my sister ran toward the tent in a frenzy. I hastily followed and might still be standing there if she hadn't snapped us out of it. Reaching the tent, we found our parents waiting, stirred by the commotion. My mother grabbed onto me, desperate for an explanation that we could barely get out. My sister and I were desperately trying to explain what we saw. My voice shook as I spoke, and I could tell my parents were struggling to believe us. The look on their faces was a mix of concern and disbelief. They tried to give us good explanations, suggesting it could have been an owl or a heron, but we knew it was neither. Owls don't have bodies that big, and herons don't hang upside down from trees. And that's when we heard the noise again, that swooshing sound, like heavy fabric caught in a gust of wind. My dad decided to check it out, flashlight in hand. He stepped out, and he zipped the tent up quickly behind him, telling to stay inside for safety. The minutes he was gone felt like hours. We just sat there, not speaking, listening for any sign of him or the creature. He came back after about 20 minutes looking puzzled. Said he saw nothing but noticed broken branches on the ground and claw marks on the bark of some trees. He didn't want to scare us more, but he believed that something was out there, and there was some good explanation for it. We decided to stay inside the tent for the rest of the night. No one slept much, though. Every noise, every rustle of leaves made us hold our breath. The next morning, we packed up at first light. The air was still, and that sweet, sickly smell was gone. As we folded the tent, my dad pointed out a set of deep impressions in the dirt. Something heavy had landed there. It wasn't conclusive proof, but it was enough to validate that we hadn't imagined the whole thing. On the drive home, we were quiet, each lost in thought. It's been years since that night, but the memory is as vivid as ever. Sometimes I think about heading back to Keystone Lake to look for answers or maybe just to face that fear again. I have been meaning to write to you for quite some time, but I've been very busy. First, let me introduce myself. My name is Matt, and I am now a senior analyst at one of the many federal agencies here in DC. I will not mention which agency, as we are not allowed to discuss what goes on inside these walls. Both my wife and I have had quite a few encounters with beings that we cannot explain. It's happening so much that we are really getting worried. While searching for answers regarding our experiences with what most would call paranormal, I found your site. Over the last year or so, what has brought me to this point of searching is the fact that I have seen things that should not be real, but yet they are. These encounters began about 2 years ago in California, where we lived at the time. My wife was driving us home from dinner with friends late one night through downtown San Francisco. It was foggy and dark outside that night. As we were crossing Market Street near the financial district, my wife noticed something weird out of the corner of her eye across the street. It was moving towards us on all fours. She yelled and pointed, "What is that?" She slowed and looked back at it, and then screamed even louder. She said that whatever it was stood up like a man and walked away when she slowed. She insisted that it wasn't human. I didn't really see it, but we both were pretty freaked out but also intrigued. So, instead of going straight home, we decided to drive around town looking for any more signs of weirdness happening in San Francisco. About 15 minutes later, while heading down Mission Street toward the Soma District, she spotted another creature, and we both saw it this time. This time, it was not on all fours, but rather resembled an extremely tall and skinny man with very long arms. It stopped in front of us and turned its head towards our car. I can't explain how weird it looked, like something out of one of those movies you see late at night on cable TV. Its face had almost no features except for two large black eyes, which I could see even with the minimal light from nearby street lamps. As my wife gasped, I yelled, "Holy shit!" before she hit the accelerator and took off at full speed. The next day we talked about what happened, but decided not to tell anyone because they would probably think we were crazy. Anyway, we were moving soon and would be leaving it all behind us. We moved back east soon after due to job transfers. My wife is also a federal employee. About 6 months later, she told me that, while driving home from work, she saw another strange creature near Annapolis. It was crawling through a field next to her car as she drove by. After hearing her story, I began searching online for similar accounts and came across your site. My personal experiences started last summer when my boss asked me if I wanted to attend a conference in Sacramento about some new procedures being implemented by various agencies, including ours. So, off to California I went. At first, everything seemed normal enough. I was staying at a nice hotel downtown, close to where the conference was being held. I arrived early, so I had time to go sightseeing throughout the city. On the third day there, during an afternoon break between sessions, and while wandering around the Old Town area, things got strange. It happened suddenly while I was looking into a shop window. I briefly saw my reflection, and it did not look at all like me. This lasted only a few seconds, then it vanished. Startled, I briefly thought that maybe the stress from travel had caused a momentary hallucination. Later that evening, I noticed the same reflection while sitting at the hotel bar. It appeared, then disappeared again after a few seconds. This continued every day until the conference ended. During my last night after the conference was over, I was alone in my room reading, when suddenly I saw myself standing next to my bed staring back at me. I freaked out and called my wife, who talked me down and settled my nerves. The next morning, I checked out of the hotel early and headed home. After returning to DC, everything returned to normal for a while, until 2 months ago. On a Saturday evening, my wife was out with friends, and I decided to go downtown to see the latest movie. It was pouring rain, so I figured the best way to get there was by metro. Once I arrived, I took the escalator up from the station into the city. Alongside the wall, I noticed someone watching me as I went past. I couldn't tell what they looked like because their face was covered by a hood. I hesitated momentarily, thinking I might know this person. I stopped, turned around, and looked back, hoping they would remove the hood. Suddenly, I felt something strange happening. Everything started going dark. I realized I was not able to move. It felt like I was trapped inside my own body, looking through a window pane at my own life. Moments later, I found myself floating above the ground, still paralyzed. Looking down, I could see the man's feet wearing black shoes, and his hands in his pockets with his fingers slightly curled. Seconds later, the darkness lifted, revealing the full figure before me. The guy stood 6'2" inches or taller, with a skinny frame and long arms that dangled at his sides. His fingers were extremely long, reaching almost below his knees. He had a short, stubby nose and a small mouth that was barely noticeable. His skin had a leathery appearance all over. I thought this guy must be some sort of monster. I then heard a familiar voice saying, "Don't worry." It sounded like my wife telling me that she loved me. I turned toward her, seeing a woman wearing a white gown. As quickly as they had appeared, both the woman in the gown and the man with the hood vanished. Later, I learned that other people had witnessed similar creatures and apparitions. Many described them as shadow beings moving in and out of buildings. Eyewitnesses say these beings are often observed during daylight hours. I know this sounds crazy, but it is what I experienced. I just don't have any idea why it's happened to me so much. Like, am I losing my mind? Is there something in my and my wife's drinking water? Honestly, it's like we're cursed. And I don't say that lightly. I'm really starting to think that's what's happening to us. Please send prayers. So there I was, just hanging out at my parents' place in northwestern Connecticut. This was back in the late 80s, and I remember it like it was yesterday. We had this old farm that was pretty much hugged by the National Forest, which meant we got all kinds of wildlife visiting. Deer, bear, you name it. The house was right up against this forest, which was mostly deciduous trees. Oaks, maples, and a whole bunch of birch. Around the edge of our property, there were these pine trees that had been planted years ago. They were mainly there to give us a bit of privacy. We had this big backyard too. It was about an acre, cleared out for our veggie garden and the lawn, with some apple and peach trees thrown in for good measure. Most of the place was left wild though, with wild blueberry bushes pretty much everywhere. So we had these two fenced off bits. One was around the garden to keep the rabbits out, with their hutches on stilts along the edge. And the other was this bigger area that we'd fenced off from the woods. It was about half an acre and was where we kept the chickens, right behind the big grape arbor. The whole property was ringed by these old stone walls. Not the kind made by man. I'm talking about the kind that were put together centuries ago. Just big granite boulders stacked on top of each other. They made all these little caves underneath, which was pretty cool. Anyway, this one day in the summer, I was there by myself. Both my folks were at work, which left me to look after the place. It was a normal enough day at the start. I fed the rabbits, checked on the chickens, watered the plants, and then I just sat down to chill for a bit. I was under this canopy near the garden, just watching the animals and sipping on some iced tea. Rudy, that's my German Shepherd, was off doing his own thing. He'd wander off, but always came back every now and then to make sure I was still around. But after a while, I noticed something weird. It got real quiet all of a sudden. The birds stopped chirping, and even the dogs that were barking in the distance shut up. It was eerie. Then Rudy comes back, and he's not himself. He's got his tail between his legs, his ears are down, and he's got this look on his face. He's scared, really scared. And out of nowhere, there's this huge thud, followed by this crashing sound, like something massive had just dropped from one of the trees. The whole thing happened so fast, it's still a blur when I think back on it. One second, I'm chilling with my iced tea, and the next, there's this huge crash from the garden. Rudy and I just bolt straight up. We turn around to see what the heck made that noise, and that's when we see it. There it was, standing in the garden, not even 20 feet from where I was. This thing was huge. I'm talking 7 feet tall at least, covered from head to toe in this dark, shaggy hair. But its face, that's what I remember most clearly. It was almost bare, with just a thin layer of skin, no hair at all. And the eyes, they were this weird yellowish color, glowing almost. It was kind of dim under the canopy, but those eyes stood out like they had their own light or something. The rest of it, though, I couldn't make out too well. What with the shadows and the leaves and all, I couldn't move. I just stood there, locked onto those bright yellow eyes, and poor Rudy was whimpering behind me, scared out of his mind. We must have stood there for what felt like forever, until it broke eye contact and charged at us, growling like something out of a nightmare. I snapped out of it then, grabbed the first thing I could find, a big stick, and started swinging it over my head, backing up and yelling as loud as I could. But this thing, it didn't even flinch, just kept coming at us. I kept backing up until I hit the stone wall, and man, I fell hard. Hit my back and got knocked out cold for a second. When I came to, it was right there, inches away from me, growling and showing its teeth like it was about to attack. But then, everything slowed down, like some weird slow-motion movie. I could hear every little sound, the insects, the leaves. Even my own breathing sounded weird and far away. It was like time had stopped but was still going. And then it pounced, landing right on me, heavy as a boulder. I thought that was it for me. I tried to push it off, but it felt like pushing against a mountain. I looked up into those eyes again, thinking this was the end. But then, just like that, things snapped back to normal speed. Somehow, I got a burst of strength, or maybe it let up a bit, but I managed to get away. Instead of coming back at me, it just bolted for the nearest tree and disappeared into the woods. Rudy, crazy as he is, went right after it, jumping the fence and chasing it down. I ran after them, heart pounding, feet barely keeping up with the fear and adrenaline pumping through my body. I got to the edge of the woods, scanning the dense thicket for any sign of movement, any hint of Rudy or that thing. But there was nothing, just the sound of my own breath in the forest around me, alive with sounds that were now just background noise to my panic. They had vanished into the trees, as if swallowed up by the forest itself. I stood there for what felt like hours, calling out for Rudy, my voice growing hoarse. The sun began to set, and that's when I heard it, the familiar jingle of Rudy's collar. I turned around and there he was, coming out of the trees, looking a bit worse for wear but unharmed. Relief washed over me like a flood. I didn't care about that creature anymore. I was just glad to have my dog back. We walked back to the house, Rudy sticking close by my side, both of us spooked and still on high alert. I double-checked all the fences and made sure the gates were secure before we went inside. That night, I didn't sleep much, replaying the day's events over in my mind. What had it been? Why did it run? And did Rudy do out there all alone? I had no answers, just a deep sense of gratitude that it hadn't gone another way. The mystery of that day is still with me, even though I lost Rudy going on 25 plus years now. It's my own strange tale of the Connecticut woods that I'd carry with me forever. It was a regular night, just like any other. I was heading home from work, driving through Elk County, Pennsylvania. I live right outside of Benazet, a small town where everyone pretty much knows everyone. The road home is one I could drive with my eyes closed. Not that I would ever try it, but you get the idea. It's this winding road, lined with thick trees on either side, pretty isolated and quiet, especially at night. So there I was, it must have been around midnight. I just passed the local cemetery, a spot that always gives me the creeps, even though I don't believe in that sort of thing. The moon was full and bright, casting this eerie glow everywhere. It's funny how a full moon can make even familiar places look different, almost otherworldly. As I rounded a bend in the road, something caught my eye. At first, I thought it might be a deer or an elk. We have a lot of them around here. But then, this thing, whatever it was, stepped onto the road, right into my headlights. And man, I realized then it was no deer. Describing it is tough. It's like trying to explain a color you've never seen before. The best I can do is say it looked like some kind of skinless dog or coyote. But with a twist, it had human-like features. Its hair was long and black, but its face, it was more human than animal. It was running on all fours at first, but then, as it hit the pavement, it stood upright and started sprinting. This thing, it was bizarre. Its arms were really long, and its hands were like a mix between paws and human hands. Its hips were wide, and its legs short, so when it ran, it was more of a hopping sprint. I can't even guess how fast it was moving, but in just a blink, it crossed the road and vanished into the trees. I couldn't process what I'd seen. My mind was racing as I drove past the spot where it disappeared. All I knew was that I wanted to get home, fast. I didn't speed, but I was definitely pushing the limit. Once home, I locked everything. Windows, doors, you name it. Sleep was out of the question that night. I was too wired, too freaked out to even think about closing my eyes. The next day, still shaken, I called my brother. He lives about 10 miles away. I asked him to come over so we could go back to that spot, see if we could find any clue about what I saw. So, there I was, the day after the sighting, standing with my brother at the spot where this whole crazy encounter went down. We scoured the area, looking for anything out of the ordinary. But aside from that weird smell, there was nothing. It was like whatever I had seen had vanished into thin air, without a trace. My brother, he's always been more open to this stuff than me. He listened to my story, nodding, not even surprised. Turns out he's had his fair share of weird encounters in the area. He started telling me about the strange noises he's heard at night, the shadows he's seen moving in the woods, stuff that he never mentioned before because he thought I'd just scoff at it. We spent a good part of the day just walking around, talking about what this thing could be. My brother's theory about a portal or gateway wasn't just some random idea. He'd been piecing together stories from around town, old legends, recent sightings, and strange occurrences. According to him, there's a long history of unexplained events in these woods. Disappearances, strange lights, eerie sounds, you name it. Now, I'm not saying I became a believer right then and there, but I couldn't ignore the mounting pile of questions. This wasn't just some random, isolated incident. There was a pattern, and it was getting harder to just brush off. The more we talked, the more curious I got. I started doing some research of my own. I hit the local library, scoured the internet, and even chatted with some of the older folks in town. The stories I heard were all over the place, some too bizarre to take seriously. But others had this ring of truth to them that was hard to ignore. One thing that kept coming up in my research was the term skinwalker. It's a legend among Native American cultures, a being capable of transforming into, possessing, or disguising itself as an animal. The description sort of matched what I saw, but I wasn't ready to jump to conclusions. Nights became a bit restless for me after that. Every sound outside my window made me jump. I kept my curtains closed, my doors locked. I even started taking a different route home from work, avoiding that stretch of road where I saw whatever it was. My days were consumed with trying to find answers. I started taking walks in the woods during the day, of course. I wasn't about to wander around after dark. I'd look for signs, anything unusual. Most days, I found nothing. But there were moments, fleeting glimpses of something off in the distance, or a strange noise that I couldn't quite place, that kept me searching. This whole thing, it started taking over my life. My friends noticed I was distracted, always lost in thought. I tried explaining it to a couple of them, but I could tell they didn't really believe me. Can't say I blame them. If it hadn't happened to me, I wouldn't believe it either. It's been a while now since that night, and I still don't have any concrete answers. But I've come to accept that there are things in this world that can't be easily explained. I don't know if I'll ever see that creature again, and I'm not sure I want to. But I know what I saw, and it's opened my eyes to the possibility that there's more to this world than what we see. As for that stretch of road, I still avoid it. Maybe one day I'll be brave enough to drive it again at night. But for now, I'll stick to the long way home. It's funny how one experience can change your whole perspective on things. I used to laugh at stories like this. Now, I'm the one telling them. My wife and I were in Big Bend National Park in Texas last year, at the end of April. We decided to take a trip down there to see if we could spot any of the unusual creatures that have been reported there over the years. I had read about the Marfa Lights, also known as the Marfa Ghost Lights, and thought it would be interesting to investigate some of these strange phenomena that have been reported for many years. I was stationed at Fort Bliss, Texas in El Paso, back in 1969 to 1970, and remembered hearing stories about these lights. It seemed like every time someone mentioned them, they also talked about being chased by something out in those hills. As far as my knowledge on this subject is concerned, I don't think anyone has ever really explained what causes these lights, or who or what is chasing people around out there. There seems to be a lot of folklore connected with both phenomena. We left our home near Tucson on Monday and drove half of the 9-plus-hour trip, and we arrived at Big Bend early Tuesday afternoon. We checked into one of the cabins within the park boundaries, then went up into Terlingua, a small town just a bit northeast. Then drove a bit further to La Kiva Bar and Restaurant to grab a bite to eat before heading back into our cabin for an early evening sleep. The next day, we started hiking around after breakfast until mid-afternoon when it got too hot. Texas at this time was already 90 degrees. As nightfall approached, my wife wanted us to head up north from Panther Junction towards Persimmon Gap, where she heard reports that people often saw shadowy figures running alongside their vehicles. She thought it may have something to do with skinwalkers, which she read quite a bit about while living in Arizona, but it was getting too late, so we gave up on that idea. I asked one of the rangers about any sightings or reports concerning Bigfoot in the area. He told me that there have been many stories over the years, but nothing substantial except for tracks found here and there. I thought this was interesting information. The only problem they had was trying to determine what made those impressions on the ground. They weren't deep enough to make out details, but they seemed odd. We got back to our cabin around 9 p.m., opened up all windows, then went outside onto the porch area with binoculars and my camera mounted on a tripod. We waited until close to midnight when it started getting really dark. You know how bright it can get in Big Bend. It's bright because of all those stars. As we looked across towards Mexico from where we were sitting, I noticed an orange light coming from below us, just beyond Lajitas. She quickly ran inside, grabbed her phone, and then called her friend Lucy. After hanging up, she explained that Lucy's husband witnessed something similar several years ago near Study Butte while he was driving home late at night. He told her about these two lights chasing him down the highway before suddenly disappearing as he crossed into Presidio County. Anyway, at this point we were both tired and nothing concrete had happened, so we headed back inside the cabin to hit the hay. So the next day, we decided to return to the park. My wife seemed a bit disappointed. She had hoped for a close encounter with the unknown, something more than just lights in the distance, and hearing about strange tracks. We walked around a bit, but still no sightings. That evening, we decided to give it one last try. We picked a spot near the Rio Grande, where it was quiet and secluded. As darkness enveloped the landscape, we sat there, just watching and waiting. Hours passed. Crickets chirped in the background, and the occasional howl of a distant coyote pierced the night. But the mysterious lights didn't appear. Instead, the air around us began to change, and the temperature dropped. We were about to call it a night when my wife nudged me. "Look," she whispered, pointing to the river. There, in the dim light cast by our camp lantern, we could see something moving across the Rio Grande. It was hard to make out, but it looked like a figure, but not human. It moved with an odd, fluid grace that was mesmerizing. I lifted the binoculars to my eyes, trying to get a better look. The figure was tall, and even at this distance, I could tell it was covered in what seemed like fur. Or maybe it was just the shadows. It stopped mid-river, and it felt like it was looking right at us. My heart was racing, but I couldn't look away. "Do you see that?" I asked my wife, my voice barely a whisper. She didn't answer, just nodded, her eyes fixed on the figure. We watched as it reached the other side of the river and disappeared into the thick brush. We sat there for what felt like hours, neither of us willing to move or speak. Finally, I reached over and gently took her hand. Let's go back to the cabin, I said. We packed up our things quietly and made our way back. When we got back to the cabin, we locked the door and sat on the couch, listening to the silence of the night, both excited and a bit scared of what we had seen. The next morning, we were quiet as we packed up the car to head home. The drive back was uneventful, but the image of that figure in the river stayed with me. I kept going over it in my mind. It wasn't until we were almost home that my wife finally broke the silence. "What do you think that was?" she asked. I shook my head. "I don't know," I replied. "But it sure was something unbelievable, wasn't it?" She nodded. "Yeah, it was something. We haven't been back to Big Bend since then. But sometimes, when we're sitting outside on a clear night, I find myself looking up at the stars and thinking about it. The not knowing can be frustrating, but it's also thrilling. And that's okay. Sometimes, it's about the wonder and the thrill of the unknown. And that night, at the edge of the Rio Grande, we got to do that. So, that's our story. It's not full of dramatic revelations or answers to age-old questions. But it's our experience, a shared moment that we'll never forget. And maybe, just maybe, that's more important than any answer we could have found. I am 47 years old, and I currently reside in Ohio. As a child, my family lived on an Army base in Colorado Springs, Colorado, which is home to the North American Aerospace Defense Command, NORAD for short. Both my parents were officers in the U.S. Air Force. We lived in a housing area called Cody Village, situated right next to Cheyenne Mountain, where NORAD is located. Our house was against the mountainside of Cheyenne Mountain. One summer evening, around July or August of 1982, when I was about 10 years old, I fell asleep on our living room couch while watching TV with my mom and dad. My older sister and younger brother had already gone to bed. They were much younger than me at that time. My parents woke me up to tell me it was time for bed. As you enter our front door, there are stairs that lead upstairs directly across from you. The window in my bedroom faced the mountainside behind our house. The window was not very high off the ground, because our house was set far back into the hillside. There were two large pine trees between my bedroom window and the thick woods that stretched up along Cheyenne Mountain, starting about 20 feet away. After my parents woke me up, I walked up the stairs and over to my bedroom. I glanced out my bedroom window and saw something walking toward those two large pine trees from the woods beyond. Describing what I saw is difficult, because it didn't resemble any natural creature that exists today. The closest description might be a werewolf-type creature, but even that doesn't quite capture it. It appeared taller than an average adult male, probably standing around 7 feet tall, and was walking on two legs. It had a wolf-like head, though more elongated than a normal wolf's, or anything you might see in a movie. Its face or head looked similar to an otter's, with sharp, pointy teeth. The creature itself didn't seem overly muscular, even though muscle was visible under its grayish-colored fur, which was lighter than that of a black bear. So, I'm staring at this thing, and my heart is doing the samba in my chest, right? I mean, it's not every day you see something straight out of a monster flick in your backyard. But there it was, kinda just lumbering toward the trees like it's out for an evening stroll. And I'm stuck there, glued to the spot. I remember thinking I should shout for my folks, but part of me didn't want to make a sound. Like, what if this thing hears me? But then, what if it comes up to the house? I'm stuck in this mental tug of war when the thing stops by the pine trees. It just stands there sniffing the air. I'm thinking, okay, this is it. It's going to turn around, see me, and that's the end of my story. But it didn't. It looked confused, lost. It's hard to explain. Then, out of nowhere, it lets out this howl. Not the kind you hear in movies. Not that long, sad sound. It was sharp, quick, like it was annoyed or something. After that, it just turns and trots back into the woods. Just like that, as if it decided there was nothing interesting, and it was time to hit the road. I don't remember moving until I heard my dad call out, asking if I was coming to bed. My voice was a whisper when I said, yeah, I was on my way. I didn't tell them what I saw. I figured they'd say it was a dream or I was half asleep or something. The next day, I went out to look at the trees, half expecting to find footprints or werewolf fur or something. There was nothing. No prints. No broken branches. Nothing. It was like it never happened. But I know what I saw. I didn't sleep well for weeks after that. Kept looking out the window, expecting to see it again. But I never did. Sometimes I wonder if it was just passing through, or if maybe, just maybe, it was something from the mountain, from NORAD, something that got out. Who knows? Years went by and I joined the Air Force like my folks. Didn't stay in Colorado though. Moved around, saw the world. But I never saw anything like that creature again. I told the story a few times, to buddies over a beer. Most laughed, a couple looked like they believed me, or they wanted to. Now, here in Ohio, I hike a lot, always in the woods, always looking for something, anything that might explain what I saw that night. Never found an answer, but I'll tell you this, I never look at the woods the same way, especially not at night. And on the off chance that I hear something that sounds like a howl, I'm not ashamed to say I get that same little samba in my chest, just like when I was a kid. My name is Eric and I live in the northwest suburbs of Chicago. First, I want to express my admiration for your show and all things paranormal. In fact, I am currently working on a master's degree in parapsychology at DePaul University. Over the years, I've had a number of experiences, but one stands out because it involved multiple sober witnesses, at least until they saw what we did. This incident occurred about 15 years ago when my friends Chris and Dan still lived with their parents. Both have moved away since then, and we've lost touch, so I cannot get them to verify any details beyond my own recollection. One evening, we were all hanging out, drinking beers at their house, when Dan proposed a bit of fun. He suggested we visit Bachelor's Grove Cemetery around midnight, a place I'm sure you're familiar with. Initially, everyone was enthusiastic, but as time passed, most backed out, either due to fear or being too drunk to drive. In the end, only Mike, Dan, and I were determined enough to go. It took us about 20 minutes by car to reach the cemetery. The place looked very creepy, yet everything seemed calm as we approached on foot. However, as soon as we stepped through the entrance gate, something felt off, akin to how animals might sense an impending earthquake. Without flashlights, we used our cell phones for light, which was adequate, albeit not very bright. After sauntering around for several minutes, capturing photos and joking about the lack of paranormal activity, Mike suggested we all sit down quietly together. Dan mentioned a rumor. If you bring flowers to Bachelor's Grove late at night, ghostly figures with bouquets would appear around a particular gravestone where many children were buried. We found dried roses on one such stone inside its fence railing. Dan picked them up from the grass, handing each of us one. Although I thought it was a bit silly, I played along. We all sat down facing the stone and each other, and waited about 5 minutes for something, anything, to happen. When it seemed like nothing would, Mike interrupted with an excited, "Hey guys, look over there." He pointed to our right, about 30 feet away, where a large tombstone stood beside a leafless tree. Our gazes followed, and we saw what had caught Mike's attention. Three figures in white robes, appearing faint or blurry as though made of smoke, were walking single file across the clearing toward another gravestone engulfed in ivy. As the figures drew nearer, they became clearer, and we could see that each held flowers against their chests. A chill ran through me when Dan said, "That's not just fog." Mike agreed, stating the obvious. "No kidding. Look how detailed they are. Those things are people." Right after he spoke, the first figure reached the ivy-covered gravestone, lifted his arm, placed his bouquet upon it, and stepped back in line. The second and third figures followed suit, each placing their flowers atop the grave, before vanishing entirely next to that specific site. I had never seen anything like it before, nor have I since. And that's when it hit me. The weight of the situation, I mean. Here we were, three guys who joked about ghosts and spirits, and now we were witnesses to something that defied all reason. Dan was the first to break the silence, whispering, "Did you see their faces?" I hadn't, and neither had Mike. They were just too blurred, or maybe our brains just couldn't process what we were seeing. We sat there in stunned silence, the kind of quiet that screams in your ears. Then, without a word, we got up almost in unison, as if a silent signal had been given. Walking back to the car was a blur. Nobody spoke. It was as if talking might shatter the fragile reality we were clinging to. It wasn't until we were safely inside the car, doors locked and engine running, that any of us dared to speak. "Should we go back?" Mike asked, a tremble in his voice betraying his tough exterior. The idea was immediately shot down. "No way," Dan said. "I'm not sure I want to know more." I agreed, my voice a mere whisper. We drove off, leaving the cemetery and the night's events behind us, but the memory was seared into our minds. The next day was a haze of confusion. We met up, almost like a support group, trying to make sense of what we saw. We each remembered the figures, the flowers, and the overwhelming feeling of otherworldliness. But as we talked, it was clear our memories differed slightly. Mike was convinced the figures had been solid, while Dan thought they seemed more like projections from a movie. I wasn't sure what I believed. The whole thing felt like a dream. We never did go back to Bachelor's Grove, even though we talked about it often. Life moved on, we graduated, started careers, and eventually, the incident became nothing more than a story we'd share when the topic of ghosts came up. But every time I pass a cemetery, I think about that night. I think about the chill that ran down my spine, the silent agreement to leave, and the unspoken pact that what we saw was real, even if it was something we couldn't explain. Years later, I can still recall the cold night air, the eerie silence of the graveyard, and the way the moonlight seemed to avoid touching the ground where those figures walked. I've read every book on the paranormal I can find, looking for an explanation, but nothing has come close. It remains an enigma, a true paranormal experience that I was part of. And maybe, in the end, some things are meant to stay unexplained. After all, isn't the mystery part of what draws us to the paranormal in the first place? All right, I've been mulling over sharing this for a while now, and honestly, I'm not even sure why I'm doing it. But here goes nothing. Please be easy on me. I'm not your typical outdoorsy type. I mean, I like a good walk through the woods as much as the next person, but I'm more of a let's stay inside with a good book kind of guy. My life is pretty ordinary. I work an average job in Little Rock, Arkansas at the City County Building. Nothing fancy, just a 9-to-5 that pays the bills and keeps me in coffee and sandwiches. I live alone, which is by choice, mostly because I like the quiet. Helps me think because my head can get pretty crazy if I'm not relaxed. But there's one thing that's not ordinary in my life, not by a long shot, and it's the reason I'm writing this now. I never believed much in cryptids or creatures of legend. They were just stories you told around a campfire or read on internet forums late at night when sleep eluded you. That was until last spring. It was a Saturday a few years ago, and I had driven out to the Ozarks to clear my head. The drive took me just over 3 hours. Work had been piling up, and the walls of my apartment seemed to close in on me. I needed to be somewhere open, somewhere I could hear the leaves rustle without the constant hum of the city in the background, somewhere far from home. I found a secluded trail that wasn't too rough. The day was nice, a bit overcast, but the air was fresh, filled with the scent of pine and damp earth. I walked for a while, not really aiming to go anywhere particular, just walking to enjoy the solitude. I had reached a part of the trail that was bordered by thicker woods on one side and a steep drop on the other. The path curved ahead, and I remember feeling this sense of apprehension as I approached the bend, like I was walking towards something I wouldn't be able to explain. As I rounded the corner, I saw it. It was standing, if you could call it standing, at the edge of the woods, partially concealed by a thicket. The thing was tall, taller than any man I've ever seen, and covered in scales that seemed to shimmer with a greenish hue that was almost sickly in the dim light. It had these piercing yellow eyes that were fixed on me, unblinking. I stopped dead in my tracks. My mind was racing, trying to rationalize what I was seeing. It wasn't a man, it couldn't be. The proportions were all wrong. Its arms were too long, hanging awkwardly by its sides, ending in what looked like clawed hands. And the head, it wasn't human. It was elongated, almost serpent-like, with a jaw that seemed to be set in a permanent grimace. All this, and not to mention that this thing had not clothes or shoes. We stood there, looking at each other. I couldn't move. I wasn't even sure I was breathing. All the sounds of the forest had faded away, and there was this suffocating silence that enveloped us. I felt like the air had been sucked out of my lungs. Then, slowly, the creature moved, not towards me, but parallel, as if it was giving me a wide berth. It was deliberate, cautious. Its eyes never left mine as it moved, and I could see now that its skin had this texture to it that I couldn't quite comprehend. It was like looking at a living mosaic, tiles of green and black shifting with each subtle movement. As it reached the other side of the path, it paused, and for a brief moment, I thought it would speak. I don't know why I thought that. Maybe because in all those stories, there's always a moment of revelation, a message imparted, but it just turned its head slightly, as if acknowledging my presence, and then it slipped into the woods. I stood there for a long time after it was gone. The sounds of the forest slowly returned, but they seemed hollow, like a facade that had been shattered and hastily put back together. I eventually made my way back to my car, and I drove home the 3 hours in a daze. I barely even remember the drive. I didn't sleep that night, or for many nights after. My quiet apartment felt too silent, and every shadow seemed to stretch just a bit too long. So, why am I telling you this? I don't know. Maybe I just needed to tell someone, even if it's strangers on the internet. Maybe I'm hoping someone else has seen what I saw, and I'm not alone in this. I went back to the trail one more time the following year, driven by a mixture of fear and fascination. But I've never seen the creature again. Sometimes I convince myself it never really happened, but then I remember those eyes, and I know it was real, totally real. I was searching the internet for some strange occurrences that have happened in Yellowstone National Park and came across your website. None of the stories I found seemed true or factual, particularly the one about a park ranger being chased by Bigfoot. This is why I decided to send you an email explaining my own experience that took place while visiting Yellowstone. I visited this beautiful national park back in 2012 with my wife. We were there for about a week, staying at a few different campgrounds. On our last night, we decided to stay at Grant Village Campground on the southwest side of Yellowstone Lake. We set up our tent right near where the showers and bathrooms were located, so we wouldn't have to walk far during the middle of the night if need be. We had spent most of our day exploring around Old Faithful and other geyser basins throughout the park before making it back to our campground later in the evening. It was already dark out when we arrived back from all of our adventures, and it was very quiet throughout most of the campsite area, probably because it was getting close to October. There weren't many people camping out at this time either, due to the colder weather setting in. As I said earlier, we set up camp near the shower bathroom facility, which sat adjacent to a large open field surrounded by forest on both sides, along with campsites lined around the edge as well, ours being the closest site toward the center or backside. My wife went into the tent shortly after arriving back, while I stayed outside cooking dinner over a fire pit nearby, near the pavilion-type structure of the next shower building. While cooking dinner, everything seemed normal until I noticed how silent it had gotten around me. Even though I could hear occasional vehicles passing by off-road every now and then, I still couldn't shake the feeling something wasn't right anymore. Being a former military police officer myself, having served overseas in Afghanistan during Operation Enduring Freedom several years prior, along with other combat zones during time spent active duty, as well as law enforcement afterwards, I have learned to trust my instincts over the years. And this was one of those times when gut feelings told me something wasn't right, especially being outdoors, where I could potentially face any number of dangerous situations. After about 10 minutes or so of cooking, I heard a faint noise coming from the woods behind me. It sounded like footsteps crunching on leaves and twigs, At first, I thought it was just an animal wandering around, but then the footsteps seemed to get closer and louder. The sound was definitely bipedal and did not resemble any animal movement that I had ever heard before. I turned off my stove burner and grabbed my flashlight. I shined it in the direction of the noise, hoping to catch a glimpse of whatever was out there, but all I could see were trees and darkness. Then suddenly, everything went silent again. The silence lasted for what felt like minutes, but in reality, it must have only been seconds. Then there was a loud crashing sound coming from the woods, followed by what sounded like heavy breathing. I immediately called out to my wife, who was still inside our tent. "Honey, wake up! There's something out here." I unzipped the tent door and saw her sitting up with a worried look on her face. "What's going on?" she asked. "There's something in the woods," I replied. "I don't know what it is, but it doesn't sound friendly. Should we call someone?" she asked nervously. I considered calling park rangers or even other campers nearby for help, but part of me didn't want to risk leaving our campsite alone while waiting for assistance. Suddenly, another crash came from the woods, followed by more heavy breathing. This time, though, there seemed to be some sort of rhythm or pattern to its breaths, as if whatever it was knew we were listening. My heart started pounding as fear began creeping into my mind. Without saying anything else to my wife, I quickly packed up our camping gear into our car that was parked next to us. Once everything was loaded up, we got into the car and locked it all up. As soon as the engine started running, the lights turned on and shone into the trees. That's when we noticed something standing near the edge of the tree line, directly across from where we had been cooking earlier. It was a tall and dark figure that seemed to blend into the background so well that I couldn't make out any details other than its general shape, which appeared to be human-like. Its head appeared slightly pointed at the top, along with long arms hanging down its sides. As soon as I shined the high beams towards it, the creature quickly disappeared back behind trees. I slowly put the car in gear and drove away from the campsite as fast as I could without losing control, or worse yet, hitting another camper or park worker. We didn't stop until we reached the main road several miles later. Eventually, we found another campground to stay at for the night, far away from where our encounter occurred. I still don't know what exactly happened that night in Yellowstone National Park, but I am convinced that there was something out there watching us. Whether it was a Bigfoot or some other kind of creature, I can't say for sure. All I know is that whatever it was gave me an eerie feeling and made me fear for my life. I hope this story helps add to your collection of strange occurrences in Yellowstone. Thank you for taking the time to read my email. Sincerely, Derek.